At the risk of completely aging myself, I'll share the one thing that I have learned in this parenting journey. Childhood today looks very different. I'm sure that every generation feels that in some respects, but I think universally, everyone that grew up before the age of the smartphone can agree. Life before screens was more carefree for the kids and for the parents. Welcome to Wondercast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. Wondercast is made possible by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. Join me today as we visit with Tessa Stuckey, licensed therapist, incredible author, and co-founder of the nonprofit Look Up, which aims to educate families about balance of healthy screen use and meaningful connections with our children. Meet Tessa.
So I've been a therapist in the Houston area for about 10 years now, and I'm a mom of four. When I started working as a therapist, my oldest was about 4 years old, and I was faced with a lot of interesting challenges as a therapist that nobody in grad school, no one was talking about. My colleagues weren't talking about it. And it created a whole new journey for me as a therapist. And that was everything revolving around screens and social media. I was working with a lot of teenagers and a lot of their parents. And since I didn't grow up with social media, that wasn't a factor in my parents' parenting. It became a whole new avenue for me to explore as a mom, but also as a therapist. And I wanted to understand more. So I dove pretty deep back in 2015 and started working with families with little ones, since mine were four and under, kind of that preventative care. And then that through the years have grown into me helping families reset boundaries when it comes to screens, helping teenagers completely revamp their mental health so that they can feel stronger without the screen as much and without social media affecting them as much. I wrote a book about it. It's called For the Sake of Our Youth back in 2020. And then I started a nonprofit with a colleague almost 2 years ago. And the nonprofit is called Look Up. Everything that we do is circled around educating parents, whether it be the young parents with brand new babies to the parents with college students who their kids are, you know, not going to class and staying in their room playing video games all day. And so we kind of work with a broad range of today's new understanding of screens and addiction with that and social media.
Okay, so first of all, I need to take a minute to acknowledge that you are a mama four.
Yeah.
And you have written a book.
Yeah.
And you have started a nonprofit.
But to me, Julie, it's totally selfish. Like, I started all of this to protect my own kids. And then I'm like, wait, I need to share this with other people. And again, selfish, like only the kids at my kids' school so that my kids aren't affected by their friends that are on screens all the time. Or my son would come home and be like, Mom, everyone at school, all they talk about is Roblox and I don't play Roblox. So I feel left out. And I was like, well, I need to let their parents know everything. And then that just grew into, like, I just can't sleep with this information and not share it with people. Selfish or not, it's happening.
And you know what? I think that when you have a gift, right? When you clearly, this is a passion. So when you have a passion for something, I think it's worse to just sit on it.
Oh my God.
And so even if it means less sleep initially,
yeah,
you might be running on coffee and gray hair.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You're not though, because you've beautiful hair. Our listeners can't see it. But so anyways, what I'm saying is I am super impressed that there is a resource like this. I would love it if you could take a minute and kind of talk about how LookUp works. Like, how does that work? How do people connect?
Right.
Is it a curriculum you're following? Is it individualized therapies? Is it group therapies? Like, teach us a little bit about this program.
So it's a little bit of all of the things you just mentioned. You know, I've been public speaking on this issue since 2016. And so it was easy to bring in the speaking engagement part to the nonprofit. That was already happening. And then it became that bigger picture of how can we coach people on a one-on-one basis. So we do family coaching. We host workshops. We do a lot with companies to help them. We believe that every human being deserves to hear this message for the sake of their kids and their own family mental health. And so we don't want to stop with just the families with the young kids or anything like that. So we have created curriculum for families ready to introduce screens. We've created curriculum for families resetting. Maybe their 10-year-old is spending a little too much time playing Fortnite or Roblox or doesn't want to go to karate anymore all of a sudden, you know, because they would rather stay home and play. Or maybe something traumatic has happened. Maybe they've seen something on YouTube that now they can't sleep. So we help with all of the issues on the mental health side, as well as the realistic, practical parenting side. So workshops, programs, coaching, and then speaking engagements are still happening very much so.
And is your scope limited to the greater Houston area, or are you in a national scope?
We're national. Yeah.
That's incredible. How do people, when they want to connect with you guys, how do they go about doing that?
All they have to do is email us, and they can find that on our website, which our website is lifeisoffline.com. And I should also say, because of the name of our website, that we are not anti-tech. We really believe in a world where we blend the two and teach families and young people how to do it in a healthy manner, and adults too. But we believe life is better offline, but that it's not going to be all offline. But our website is lifeisoffline.com. Through there, you can email us at info@lookupnonprofit.com, or, you know, we're all over. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on LinkedIn, trying to get our name out there.
Awesome. Well, I would love to kind of dive in a little bit talking about tech. Like you touched on, for you and I, we did not grow up in homes where, I mean, yes, you could sit with your, like, what, AOL and log on through. Right. And it was like forever to connect so you could play Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Maybe.
Oh, my Oregon Trail.
Oregon Trail. Maybe. Like, right.
If you had the CD. That...
And for a while, it was like the floppy disk.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It was not thrilling.
No.
And so now I feel like the tech has become so engaging. And I'm just thinking about a lot of our listening population. Mm-hmm. Who you have a lot of families impacted by chronic illness. So for many of them, they've either gone through treatment, or someone in their family is going through treatment or has.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're clinicians and they're supporting people that are kind of on this journey. Just the bandwidth, the learning curve. I think about with my own four kids, 18 to 10 in that range. So they're like prime tech range. The learning curve of trying to navigate, like,
right.
It took me forever to learn Fortnite. It took me forever to learn Roblox. Then it was Instagram. Then it was, you know, Snapchat. And it's TikTok. And it's like, I am not ill.
Right.
And it's overwhelming to try to, like, learn about these things.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for our listeners that might feel like they're already at capacity?
I think what's really hard is that it has created such a convenience, right? And so whether there are family members who are struggling with mental illness or physical illness or just a hard day, it's so easy to lean on the screen. They have made it so very easy. And then on the flip side, if you don't give your kids the screen or you take the screen away, then their behavior usually becomes disruptive and really big. And then there's people, if you're out in public, who are going to judge you for that. And, you know, societally, I don't feel supported by other people, you know, that, you know, my kid is throwing a fit right now and I don't want to give him a screen just because he's throwing a fit so that you aren't disturbed at the restaurant or whatever. So I think the convenience piece is so big, and it's our job to look at what are our actual goals here. We always want the goal to be bigger than any convenience. And I think that for families struggling with chronic illness, it adds that extra layer of maybe guilt for a lot of people. Just like you said, overwhelming and frustration and almost like, I can't keep up with all this. So, oh, well, I hope that everything is okay. But it's just such a slippery slope. And so what I tell people is to figure out what their goals actually are with the screens. For me, I like to encourage people that what we don't want is for our kids to become screen obsessed. That's one goal that we want to focus on. Now, some people call this screen addiction. I think addiction is a really harsh word. So let's be real. These kids don't have their fully developed brain. So I think it's more of like an obsession. So screen obsessed, we want to avoid that. We don't want their entire world to be wrapped around what they get to do on the tablet or what they get to do on the video games. We want them to talk about other things, be interested in other things, and actually go do those other things. So that would be combating the screen obsession with balance and being very mindful of that. And if parents are sick, then really leaning on their support system to help them achieve that balance, right? The other piece is connection. We want our kids to feel connected at home. We live in a world where so many people are looking down on their screens, and so it's harder to make eye contact or have those social skills being developed and that awareness piece. And so we want them to feel connected. So time at home, really limiting screen use so that the other time can be for connection. And I would say for families who maybe they have a hard time getting out of bed or it's really hard for them to be active with their child, find time to do the more mild activities, read a book together, listen to music together, stretch together, things like that, that can have those times together where they are making eye contact, hugging each other, letting that moment of, not to get scientific, but oxytocin within the brain release more and more together. And then maybe time when they don't get to spend time together, maybe mom needs to lay down for a little bit. That's when we can rely on the screen a little bit more. But again, we need to be careful with that screen obsession, the connection piece. And then we have to be careful online because it's not regulated. And so our kids could stumble on something very inappropriate or traumatizing for their little brain and their little heart, or they could come across a predator. So I tell parents, don't ever let your guard down. Tech is always evolving so quickly, so much that even if you are so confident in that one app, don't be. And I know that that adds a little bit of stress and pressure and overwhelming feelings. But if you keep questions going with your kids, you know, what did you do on there? Who were you talking to? What do you like about the game? What do you not like about that game? You have that open dialogue there. And you just want to keep that going. Stay curious with your kids so that they can tell you. And make sure that when they do tell you something that maybe is hard to hear as a parent, you respond in a way that is thanking them for telling you, because it was probably really hard for them to admit that Roblox did something scary because they're scared you're going to take it away from them or whatever. So you thank them for telling you, and then you make a new plan together as a team. You want them to feel a part of that team of, I don't know how to parent you all the time with all these video games and all these extra things, and it's making me uncomfortable, but I know you love it and I want to trust you, but you're also only 9 years old. So let's step back a little bit and figure out how to make this okay and safe for you. And a lot of times you'd be surprised. These kids are like, I know what we can do. We can turn off chat features. And you're like, that's a great idea. Let's do that for a little bit and see how you do, right? And so having that open dialogue is really, really important.
Is there ever an age that you feel like is too late in development for a child to be able to go back?
Yeah.
You have a 15 or 16-year-old. We know that like Snapchat has become
right.
their primary form of communication with their peer group. They don't text, really. They don't, you know, call each other. They just snap each other. How do you pull back in a way that doesn't isolate them from their peer group?
So I don't think there's ever an age where it's too late. It's definitely harder. So if you have younger ones, go ahead and make these changes now. Create a new norm within your house so that it's more balanced and the time limits are set in place so that there's not that slippery slope. But the older ones, what I really like to focus on is teaching them how to be on their devices for purpose and productivity. So for Snapchat, for example, I had a client who had free reign of all the apps and all the things since she was 13 years old. And I was seeing her around senior year of high school. And she comes in and she struggled with depression and anxiety. And she says, you won't believe this, Tessa, but my dad made it so that I can only get on Snap for 20 minutes a day. I responded with, actually, I did know that was going to happen.
That was my idea.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tessa. And I was like, let's just see how it goes this week. Let's look at it as a science experiment and see how it goes. And begrudgingly, you know, I mean, there was nothing she could do. Her dad had it set to where it was off by 9 p.m. every night, came back on at 7 a.m. every morning, but only had 20 minutes from 7 a.m. till 9 p.m. Feels and seems impossible for a teenager, right? So a week goes by and she comes in and she says, okay, please don't say I told you so. Don't like gloat and definitely don't tell my dad this. But this last week has been one of the best weeks of my life. I have gotten all my work done. I'm not stressed with school. I've been sleeping better than ever. There's drama in my friend group, but I don't even really know about it because I'm not really in it. And whenever I do get on Snap, I just quickly snap someone back really quick with that intention of communication. And then I get off. I don't mindlessly scroll. I don't send silly videos or pictures of just my nose, you know, in a room just to send a snap for no reason. Like, I don't care about my snap streaks. Like, it's becoming more purposeful. And that's when I was like, oh my gosh, okay, we're on to something. And then she said, and Tessa, my anxiety and depression, I haven't really felt it this week. And so I've seen that example time and time and time again. So what I would say to parents who maybe their kids are spending too much time in their, you know, sophomore, junior, seniors in high school is to talk to their kids about limiting that time, bringing it back a bit, teaching them that productivity and intentional tech use rather than the mindless scrolling. We want to avoid just numbing out, and the kids call it bed rotting, rotting just to do nothing else. They're numbing out. They're avoiding, whether they're avoiding tasks, right? I always say that screens are a motivational killer and a lazy enhancer. So they're avoiding tasks, procrastinating schoolwork, or they don't feel like going for a run right now, or they are not wanting to feel their feelings. And we all know as adults that that's not healthy for anyone's mental health. So scaling it back a bit is a really great place to start.
And if you're listening to this and you have, like for me, I have a freshman in college this year. She's an adult. I'm thinking, oh man, shoot, missed opportunity, right? Because she is in charge of her own time management now. If you're listening and you're thinking, I really do stink as a parent, you don't, like, right? Like, we're learning to
grow.
My background is in child development, and I still am. Definitely have a giant learning curve on how to navigate and how to set limits. And it's hard, right?
Oh my gosh.
Because especially if you are feeling guilty in your illness, that you have not been able to be present in the way that maybe you were before, or maybe the way you wish you could be now. And you have this deep sadness about that. The last thing you want to do is set limits or parameters, right?
Right.
We don't want to do that. We don't want to make it harder for our kids.
We don't want to create more uproar in the house.
Correct.
Right. At LookUp, we have a saying that we are not about any of that BS, which is no blame and no shame. Because my partner and I are both very guilty of raising our kids with screens in their face for a really long time. You know, I had 4 under 4. So I was that mom that had that iPad charged all the time. By the time the twins came, I didn't even care about bringing the diaper bag with me anywhere. It was just make sure the iPads are in the car, you know? Really and truly, I would have stayed on that path had it not been for my job. And it was like this secret thing that not anybody was talking about, and I was finding out. I kind of felt like Chicken Little with like, the sky is falling, the sky is falling, you know, and like nobody else was freaking out about it. And so I want to make that very clear that there is no judgment. It is hard to take this at face value and recognize that, oh, I didn't know that. And that's why we did that. Not, oh, I should have known better. That doesn't benefit us at all. That just pushes us down. That's that self-shaming talk that's not productive for us at all. You know, there's sometimes when we can be hard on ourselves and it creates motivation and it drives us to be better. But it's those self-shaming statements that make us just feel worse and we don't get any benefit. So if we can learn to skip those self-shaming thoughts and say, I just didn't know. I didn't know. It wasn't a thing that people were talking about. And it seemed like magic to have this. I remember thinking that. My mom made some judgmental comments when my oldest was a baby. And I remember being like, oh, she just doesn't know that I've hit the jackpot. And I'm so lucky to raise kids in this tech world because I have this magic phone that will play Mickey Mouse for him when he gets fussy at the restaurant, you know? little did I know that the opposite was true. It is hard to raise kids in this tech-filled world.
Oh my gosh, so hard.
And it has really tricked and fooled all of us in so many ways. So I do want to just say that blanket statement that really and truly, the reason my partner and I feel so passionate about this is because there's so many families struggling and they don't know what else to do. They know it doesn't feel good in their gut. They know it's not how they were raised or what, but it's easier to be like, well, that's today's world. But no, there are other ways to raise our kids in today's tech-filled world that is healthy.
Schools now, since 2020, really have gone full on into Chromebooks.
Yes.
And screens and devices. I mean, that is kind of a non-negotiable. I guess technically you have the permission slip forms that come home that you can sign, but
sure,
that's what they're doing their content on.
Yeah.
It's hard when these education models that we see as being safe are doing screens. It's like, what's the balance?
So screens are not all bad and tech is not all bad. And if it's being used to be productive and be creative and get work done, that is a healthy way to be on screens. However, because kids are kids, they are going to get distracted or stumble onto something or click a link or, you know, not get their work done. I know my son at school, his partner in science will sneak a game every day during science class on his Chromebook. And it's some game where he's like trying to chase a grandma down and kill her. And I hate it so much.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Well, you know, I even think about how school has tried really hard to lock down games, right? But
right,
our kids learned early on that if I make a Google Doc and I share it with my peers,
yep,
it's basically texting, right? Like,
yes,
we can be working on a project together, but it's really just messaging back and forth.
And that actually doesn't bother me as much because I compare that to when we were in school and we would pass notes in the hallway or whatever and read it in class when we should be listening to the teacher, but I'm reading the note and I'm writing her back, you know. To me, it's that simple connection piece that we all strive for as humans and really starts to ramp up in those preteen, early teen years. You see kids really wanting to connect with each other. So that's why, you know, texting and calling each other or wanting to connect with their friends, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that everything that comes with social media and even Google Docs, because they can put links there to other sites, right?
Yep.
Those are the things that are harmful. Is it's not just texting. It's not just a phone call. It could be FaceTime that has all sorts of things that could pop up, right?
It's so overwhelming. Yes.
It is. So that's what makes it really hard. And schools, I think, have a lot of fish to fry and they just don't see that this is a big enough issue. And that also it's easier for them to turn a blind eye and say something like, oh, it's just, they're just playing cool math games. It's not that big of a deal. Or they don't think it's happening at their school because they don't hear about 80% of it. Now, more and more schools are jumping on board with the smartphone bans that are starting to happen.
Yes. In fact, at our high school, for my oldest son, the smartphone ban is so much stronger at the high school level than even the middle school level.
Really?
Yes. And he came home furious the first week because he's a junior.
Yeah.
And he came home furious like, oh my gosh, they are having us put our phones in these pocket things at the start of the day. And now we have no access to our phones. I mean, I love it.
I think it's great.
I think it is incredible. My daughter, who is in eighth grade at the middle school, she is not supposed to have a phone. And she'll be like, hey, mom, I left my cheer shoes at home. I'm like, how are you messaging me? Like,
yeah.
So clearly there's disparities. But like my son was like, why is my school so locked down and the middle school is not?
Well, really and truly, research shows that if all teachers are not on the same page, if all principals are not on the same page, then the policies will fail. Just like dress code, you know, one teacher might be okay with you wearing a spaghetti strap shirt and another teacher is not. They all need to be on the same page for it to actually be effective. Otherwise, kids are going to sneak and try to get away with it because or stay away from that one teacher. It's not fair to the teachers who are following protocol and who are enforcing the policy. And I don't like that at all. And it is interesting that the high school is more locked down than the middle school, but that just tells me that they have better administration.
And I do feel like productivity for him at school has been so much stronger. But, you know, we laugh about these kids that are still finding ways. Like, for example, he can't have access to his phone. So even when he has study blocks, like they don't have access to their phone. But he is using his Chromebook to bypass to Netflix and watching like football games from 2015. And he's like, I just watched the 2015 national championship team. Like, or do your homework.
So LookUp is very passionate to partner with school districts, and we partnered with the one that we are local to here. Finally, last year, they employed us to help revise their cell phone policy and help educate families and educate teachers and implement it. And they didn't do it the way that we suggested, and so it hasn't been super successful. A little bit of a change, you know, like their policy before still had the word beeper in it. It was so outdated. So there's been some improvements, but again, if all teachers and counselors and principals are not on the same page, then it is going to fall through the cracks. I know for smartphone usage with school, I know the fears that parents have. Absolutely. If there was an active shooter at my son's school, I would want direct access to him to know that he's alive and that he's okay. However, research shows that actually creates more danger because kids are getting on their phones and not following safety protocol. And they're not getting in that closet to hide or not putting their backpack up against the door and hiding under the desk. They are distracted by their text with their mom or their dad. And so it actually doesn't make them safer. It brings the anxiety down for parents, but for them, it puts them in a more dangerous spot. And then it's hard to really accept. I know as a mom, I would really be wanting direct access to my kids.
I would too. You're right, but that's true. I mean, think about it, even with driving, right?
Right.
You're less following the roads and where with all of the road. It's the same in a crisis situation.
Exactly. And with that said, I mean, schools that ban smartphones, like they've gotten better at communicating with parents. Every teacher has a phone. There's not just their own cell phone. Most districts, there's a landline in every classroom. And the other thing I hear from parents a lot is, well, I need to be able to text him to remind him I'm picking him up at 2 o'clock for his dentist appointment. That is choosing convenience over the goal. And the goal is for your child to build independence, responsibility, autonomy, remember himself. Or if you're really worried about it, you call the front office and they go and give him the message that he's leaving at 2 o'clock today. You know, very similar to when we were in high school.
And for some schools, like my son's, at the end of every class, you get your phone and then you take it to the next class.
Yeah.
And you have it in the hallway. And so you can do those little micro check-ins because for some kids, they do use their phone to set an alarm to take a medication. And so, sure, I feel like there are lots of ways the schools are trying to partner with families to say, hey, listen, if there is an active shooter, your kid's phone is in the classroom. Like they can grab it and hide. But I hadn't even thought about what you had said about it being a distraction. And of course it is.
To talk about the Chromebook situation, I think that schools need to start taking this more seriously, set up those firewalls, use a monitoring program that helps alert if someone's threatening to shoot up the school or cyberbullying and that sort of thing. They can pick up on that with the right monitoring programs. Like BART offers school monitoring for free. And it monitors all of those things and creates firewalls, but nothing is foolproof. And that's why at the end of the day, as parents, we need to have those open communication conversations with our kids always. You know, they are going to see things. They are going to be shown things. And it's our job to, again, not let our guard down and stay curious with our kids and keep that communication open.
Also, we talk a lot with our Wonders and Worries families about, for some kids, their coping modality is to be an information seeker. So you might have an illness and you might think that they don't know much about it, but they might be out there Googling. And so I think there's also some great conversations about, you know, this kid is going to feel more at ease when they have the information in their hand. So let's guide them to appropriate avenues in a safe way with a partnering to give them that information. Like either through like the Wonders and Worries app or Kids Health or something that's been vetted and accurate so that at least the information they're getting, you guys can find together.
What you don't want is for your child to be exploring and find a YouTuber or TikToker talking about it who is not a credible source and might have some good points, but not all good points. And then your kid is getting worked up within and not communicating that with you and hasn't slept in 3 nights because of this thing this one TikToker who's 19 years old said. The internet is not regulated. And so we have to show our kids how to research appropriately and do it together. I think that's a really important point.
I think an easy solution, at least that we have found in our household, is we don't put phones in the bedroom. Like, I feel like if you need to start somewhere, start there. Let them learn how to get quality sleep. If you don't have a child this age, maybe go find a 16 or 17 year old who has Snapchat and just set their phone in your lap and feel how many times a minute it buzzes. It's just constant a vibration.
Constant. You mentioned us growing up with like AOL Instant Messenger, and we had to be at home on the computer to do that. But every time I logged on, there were multiple people who were logged on as well, no matter what time of day it was. So imagine having that on the go. I really do think of Snapchat very similar to AOL. So it's just in their pocket on the go all the time. I was addicted to it on the computer with my parents having very strict limits. I can't imagine having it in my pocket all the time. Being online and available for friends all the time is so anxiety inducing.
It is. And there's the stigma that like, oh, you left me on read for 30 minutes. Yeah. You must not be interested in me. What?
Right. It's like, well, I just was taking a shower, you know,
or I'm in class. That's why I do think for a lot of these kids, with the schools being very intentional or trying to be about locking down phones during the day, it takes the pressure off these kids to have to respond.
There's so many times that a client will come in and say, yeah, she left me on read for 4 hours or whatever. And I say, did you ever think that maybe her mom took her phone away from her? Like maybe she got in trouble or she's on her phone too much and she needed to take a break and her mom had to make that happen. And every time clients are like, huh, I never thought about that. And I say, does your mom do that with you sometimes? And yeah, my mom and I get in fights and she'll take my phone away for like a whole day sometimes or longer. And I said, so don't you think that could be happening with other people? And it's not a personal, you know, sometimes people are being vindictive online for sure, but every time they overanalyze every single interaction, it's consuming for them and it's hard.
And I guess if you are a parent and you maybe are facing illness or someone in your family is and they have very low energy, I think there are some great ways to engage in tech that is more mutual. Like, for example, if you want to do Minecraft and do Minecraft as a connective activity, that's very similar to playing Legos, right? So you can both create a world together that's just the two of you. There are lots of great ways to still adapt the tech to be more meaningful and connecting and engaging, but also safe.
Yeah. And I think that you hit the nail on the head is that it can be a great, wonderful, powerful tool and something that bonds people. And so as long as we have that in the back of our mind and we are aware of that and we've got our guard up, then things will be okay. And you might make a mistake here and there. You know, you might tell your kid that they can play on the Switch for 30 minutes and then, oop, it's been 2 hours and I totally didn't stay on top of it. That's okay. You know, but having those conversations. And then if you see them act out behaviorally, that's when you say, you know, this is one of the reasons why I need to be better about cutting it off after 30 minutes, because I can see that you're upset now and that's no fun for anyone. And we're going to have to reassess how we want to use it. I will say that LookUp is finalizing our holiday gifting guide. And it will be per age group and all screen-free options help create a little bit of balance. We don't love the idea of somebody getting a phone or a tablet for Christmas just because it gives the idea that this is their device for them to have full control over. And really and truly, if you're ready for your child to have a device, you don't want them to have full control over it. You want them to learn how to manage it. But you stay in control. There's a difference. Think like you're the general manager and they're just the manager kind of thing. And so giving them the device for Christmas does give some mixed messages. However, I understand as well that there are times when we still really want to give them that tablet or that computer And so I would strongly suggest before you even give it to them to get it out of the box and set it up with all the parental controls that are needed to keep your kids safe. Again, go back to those goals so that they don't become screen obsessed. There's time limits set up because their prefrontal cortex, the lack of their prefrontal cortex, keeps them from really regulating. It is built to be addictive. So having that in mind and then setting up all the monitoring through Bark or external routers that can help block the inappropriate content that could come through so that when you hand it over, they can just start exploring and have fun. And you say, I know you're excited today. And for the next week, it's the novelty effect. They're going to be super obsessed with it. And so just know that. Like, that doesn't mean that they're going to be obsessed forever. They're just so excited for that 1 week or whatever. And you want to just keep reminding them, like, hey, buddy, like, there's going to be some pretty big boundaries and limits with this once you start getting into it. And I know you're excited about it, but we want to make sure that you're using it in a healthy way and that you're being productive. And these are the apps you're allowed to have. These are the ones you're not allowed to have. And if you want them, we'll talk about, you know, keeping that communication open. If you go to lifeisoffline.com, there are free resources there. There's a family tech agreement that is more of like a guideline. So no matter how old your kids are, you can lean on it to use to kind of set some expectations and boundaries, kind of getting everyone on the same page. So you can download that completely free of charge. We have a ideal tech steps. So depending on how old your kids are, what is appropriate for them to be doing on screens from 0 years old to, you know, when they leave the nest and go to college. So 18 plus. So we have that on there for free. And then we have multiple articles and blogs and resources for people to get fully free to learn all the different things that they need to learn. And to be fair, Look Up is still in infancy. We are only about 19 months old. And so we are still building our content and building our presence online, but we're putting it out there very quickly. Every day, there's more and more stuff.
Before you have change and true growth in your home, you have a lot of the uncomfortable stuff. Do you have any recommendations for parents that are like, it's going to get so bad before it gets better?
They have always had access to screens, or you think that they have too much access. Maybe you want to bring it down to 1 hour a day or whatever. They will have a reaction just because it's the same thing as, you know, cutting out a certain food dietary allergy, right? And they're used to it. It's part of their norm, and you're just resetting for a new norm. And so you have to find some patience, know that going into it, that they're not going to be super thrilled about this, but that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's actually going to be quicker than you think. If you stick to it, within a couple of days, depending on how old they are, they will start to adjust. For some people, it's within the same day. Like, even for us, we live in an area where the internet goes out easily. You know, that's how we watch TV, is streaming through the internet. We don't have tablets anymore, so I don't really worry about that as much. But there are times when we don't have anything to do online. It's not even an option. And I mean, my kids will switch so quickly into creative mode. They created, actually, I wish I had it so I could show you, but a boredom wheel. It's one of those like prize winning wheels, you know, that I bought for Look Up events, but my kids took over and they wrote different things on it that they can do. Read, write, go for a bike ride, go swimming, play with the dog, whatever. They came up with all these different options, and it came out of boredom. It came one day when all the electricity went out, actually, not just the internet. And they spin it and they have so much fun. And then they all go do that one thing. They have to do it. And then somebody else's turn to spin it. And it could be like, go play Catan, which can take a long time. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's really pushing them to experience boredom. Boredom is one of the first really uncomfortable experiences we have as human beings. And it is one of the most beautiful, creative enhancers that we easily strip from our kids when we lean on the devices too much. So it's kind of struggling through that a little bit, talking ourselves down, because I know as parents, we can get worked up when we've got whining and tantrums and tears and shouting and yelling, but kind of processing that and say, you have your one-liners of things like, I love you too much to argue about this, or I know that you're upset, but this is the way it is today. You know, I know that you really want that, but we're going to work towards how it can change so it's a healthy avenue for you. But right now it's not. You know, things to say that you're ready to go. You've like built up your strength and you're ready for battle with your kids in a healthy way.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcasts@wondersandworries.org.